Hey, yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. And once again, I'm Mo. And with me here is the king of the casters, Mr. Brett Podcast. Brett, please introduce today's guest.
That's right. Well, we have a guest. He's a singer, but he plays bass. He plays bass in Y&T. But you know what? We're actually not really here to talk about Y&T. We're here to talk about his new solo work, and that's the best part. So, Aaron Lee, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, we're super happy to have you. Super happy to have you on to talk about your new music. Because I got to be honest, I really like the new music. Live for Today, a lot of fun.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's been great to get some feedback on what I've been putting out. And Live for Today, it's going to be available June 25th, all over every streaming platform. But it is available right now. The new single, Live for Today, is available on my website at aaronlee.com. And so you can go stream it there now, or you can pick up a download as well. So
it's all out there. Catchy. It's insanely catchy.
What's that
song, Live for Today? Oh, I don't know. It's I think it's got a little bit of a harder edge to it than what we heard on your EP, but not too much. It's still very melodic and rocking.
Well, thank you. Yeah, you know, I intentionally wanted to put out a bit of a more rocking single. You know, I know I was putting out some kind of middle of the road, real vibey, chill stuff. That was just, it wasn't like a planned thing. It just, that's what was coming out at the time. So, but this time around with this particular song, I thought I need to rock it up a little bit. So I went with this one.
So then what's your process? Like, I mean, you talk about that was, the more mellow stuff was what was coming out of you. Well, like, what's your process to kind of get the songs out, and how do you tell what's going to be the one that you want to just put out?
Well, when it comes to the process, it's basically just, I'll have some riffs laying around, or I'll have something recorded on my phone, an idea, and just get an arrangement together. I work basically like a song at a time. I don't have a lot of songs floating around and working on all of them at the same time. I pick one and I roll with that. When I get to the lyrical content, that's really the hardest part for me is, writing lyrics is the most difficult part of the process, really. The music, since I'm working alone, I'm just playing everything, and, so I can just run around and just basically, try different instruments or try different things with the arrangement, and, that's also part of the process there to get that locked down and then get on those lyrics, and then getting the melodies going for the voice, but, yeah, that's just basically the process. It's pretty similar as anybody else,
How long did it take you to actually record Live for Today?
Well, I had the bed of music recorded a bit before, I even jumped in the lyrics. So I'd say the whole process was a couple months for that song, but it wasn't like a couple months straight or anything. It was, I'd walk away from it for a few days, and come back, See, that's the beauty of getting to record on your own time now is, and when you're not on the clock, is you can live with your music for a little bit as you're writing it and arranging, which I find really helpful because in the past, when I was in bands and things and putting out records when I was in local bands and stuff, is that, you go into a studio and back in the day you were paying for on the clock, by the hour, and you lay down what you had at the time, and you listen back and go, oh man, I wish I would have done this. I mean, even like a month later, you'd be like, oh, I should have done this or I could have done this. But, it's a double-edged sword though. When you're able to go back and forth like that and constantly change things, I know guys that will work on one song for a year, just keep changing stuff. And it's like, well, how much can you change? It's either a good song or it's not really. But it is cool though that to have the opportunity to live with it for a little bit. So when you walk in the next day and you listen back and you have a little more of an objective ear, so you can make some objective tweaks.
How long does it necessarily take you to figure out if it is a good song or maybe not a good song? Like, how far down the process line do you get before it's kind of like, oh, that one's not working?
I think I just have a gut instinct, really, of if it's going to work or not. If I'm moved by the vocal, especially, if that's working, then I'm pretty convinced that the whole song will work. It really does rely on, you know, the lyrical content, the melody, and the vocal. The instrumentation, you know, what I do a lot of times is I'll use certain instruments, and then I'll change out the instrument completely. Be like, oh, I don't even want that in there. I'm going to use a piano instead, or, you know, like something like that. You know, a certain guitar sound. Oh, I don't like that guitar sound. I'm going to go back and change it and make it a little cleaner or whatever, you know, but all that stuff could be tweaked on. But yeah, if you got a pretty solid chorus, you know, if you could start off with a really solid chorus and if you're feeling it and it's hitting you in the gut and your heart, then, you know, you're off to a good start.
Did you kind of learn a lot of that from working with Y&T and from Frank Hannon and such, or is it, as you say, purely instinctual?
Well, you know, with Y&T, I haven't had the opportunity yet to write with the band. You know, we've been talking about doing, you know, a new album or, you know, an EP or a song even, but we just, you know, it just hasn't gotten there yet. And with Frank Hannon, I did learn a lot from Frank in the recording process. You know, we worked on the World Peace record together, and I co-produced that with him. And, you know, watching the way that he was writing the arrangements and his vocals and songs, it opened up a different perspective for me of how he operates. You know, I mean, he's a platinum artist, you know, the guy obviously knows how to make records and write songs. So, you know, what I took is just his work ethic, really. I mean, he's such a, once he's focused on something, he's laser focused on it. It's like, you know, he really dives in and with everything he's got, you know, it's a lot of passion and a lot of soul. It's real, it's human. And that's what I would hope to take from working with him is the same approach, you know, keeping it real and keeping it human, you know, the human element to it. You know, it's, again, it's so easy for people to just make music now, you know, and it's so flooded. The market is, music in general is just so flooded with so much stuff because people can, you know, it's easy to do now, but doesn't mean it's good, you know.
Well, then for you, like, what's kind of your strategy, I guess, to cut through a lot of the people that can make music, but maybe it's not good? And like, how do you feel like you can get your music heard more and better?
Well, that's something I'm still trying to figure out, is how to get, you know, ears on my music, you know. I mean, thankfully, you know, being in Y&T is, the whole reason I know that, you know, that as a platform is what, you know, me being in the band is why I'm even getting to talk to guys like you, or, you know, getting the music out there the way it's getting out there right now, on whatever level. But it's just really difficult to get ears on new music, even if you're, you know, I was saying this, Paul McCartney, man, he put out a new record, and I'm sure, you know, Paul McCartney fans were aware of that, but the general public doesn't know that, you know. And here's a Beatle, you know, that just put out a new record, and it's flying right under the radar, you know, it's going over a lot of people's heads, and no one even knows it's there. So it's just a difficult thing, you know. But obviously with the internet and, you know, certain tools that you can use now to, you know, Spotify, Pandora, things like that, to try to market your music and get a little more focus on it. But that's a science in itself, man. So, you know, when you're a musician and you're doing everything yourself, you're writing, recording, producing, mixing, mastering, and then you got to market your music behind that, it's almost a full-time job, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, I can't imagine that. One thing that I was noticing that I really appreciate is on your website is, you know, when you have the music page, that you have the ability to stream the song, but that you can also download it and kind of pay what you want. And I think that I like that as a concept. I mean, it's a great way to support you in that regard. How well have you found that works for you?
And, you know, it's hit and miss. It really is. you know, especially when you offer a streaming platform right on your website, you know, so people can just go there and listen to it anyway. Why would they buy it, right? It's kind of the mentality of you know, this other bit of leftovers from the 90s when music was starting to be pirated and all that, and now it's just expected to be for free, which I completely obviously disagree with. You know, there's value in it. If someone listens to it and they like it, and they get something from it, you know, and it makes them feel a certain way, emotion or something, that's worth something, you know, because that wasn't there before. And, you know, music is, it's something that requires time and effort, you know, to create, whether it's good or bad, you know, whatever, you know. But naming your own price for it, I think is, from where I'm coming from, it's just, you know, like I said, if you get any value out of it, well, what's that value to you? What's it worth to you, you know? Is it 99 cents because you listen to it one time, or is you listen to it every day and you get something from it and it's worth $100? I mean, I don't know, you know, but it's a nice option though. You know, I mean, cause when you go and you sticker your music for a certain price, you know, you're just convincing people that it's just worth 99 cents. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, you know, it totally does, because, you know, and here's the thing, I know that Matt and I are also really big comic book fans, and so sometimes when you go to conventions and, like, there'll be something there and you want to pay, but half the time it's just like, I'm willing to give you money just to support you and the fact that you're continuing to, you know, create your art. And that my hope is that in something like what you're doing is that, you know, people are willing to lay down some money because they just want to support you in creating your art.
Yeah. Yeah. And that has happened, you know, with this offer that I have on my website there, you know, name your price kind of thing. And I'm positive that there's plenty of other artists out there doing the same exact thing. I mean, I think Radiohead was one of the first bands that did that when they put out one of their records. And I remember, it was a name your own price kind of a situation. And that's, you know, that's a really big step for a huge band like that, you know, because their approach probably does cost money to get it done, you know? So that was a really bold statement right there, but, you know, having that option, you know, opens up the door to more generosity, I guess, too. You know, if someone's feeling generous, they can really drop something on you and be like, wow, thank you so much. You know, there's some very generous people out there. I can say that.
Well, and you know that, and I think that's fantastic, and that's what we're looking for. I mean, you know, it's, of course, the music business, like anything, is super hard to kind of gain a foothold in, and like you say, I mean, you're lucky to have worked with a lot of artists and to be in YNT, so, you know, the more that you can get, yeah, the better, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it does allow people to continue doing what they're doing when they're, you know, they got the support to do it. I mean, that's what record labels were there for, you know, when a real record label would offer up an advance and tour support and, you know, video support and all this stuff, you know, the investment, you know. But, you know, obviously nowadays those days are over and, you know, people are pretty much on their own, you know.
So will you be able to get out and do some touring to support this, to get your music out there? Or will your kind of your schedule with YNT as things open up here, will that be pretty much taking up most of the time that you would have for on the road?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to hold off, you know, because I know that YNT is going to pick up here. We do have some things on the calendar and hopefully it just fills up even more. But I'll just have to kind of gauge my solo thing, you know, obviously around YNT. That's the main focus in my world. But, you know, since with this time off, you know, that we've had 16, almost 17 months or whatever it's been, you know, I just wanted to still stay creative in a moment of, you know, uncertainty, really, you know, to know how long things are going to stay shut down and all that. So I didn't want to come back and look at this time period and go, God, I wasted that whole time. I could have done this or done that. That's kind of, you know, going back to the song title, Live for Today. You know, that was kind of my whole approach after we came home from the last YNT tour and, you know, things were shut down. You know, it was like, okay, well, what's next? Now what am I going to do? I got to keep rolling along. You know, I don't know how long things are going to remain like this. So, yeah, that's what really kind of drove me to dive in and start releasing singles, you know, putting out solo music.
I imagine one of the things the Y&T was looking for wasn't just a good bassist, but also somebody who could harmonize. But how confident are you with your vocals as a lead singer?
As a lead singer? Well, you know, when it's my material, I'm pretty confident because, you know, I'll lay down a vocal that I can actually, you know, not make it too hard on myself. But, you know, I mean, there's guys out there sometimes. I mean, God, look at Joe Elliott, man, when he laid down that stuff on High and Dry. And, you know, all of a sudden, 35 years later, he's going, oh, my God, I got to sing that, you know. But, you know, yeah, when it comes to my own music, you know, the vocal, I'm pretty confident, you know, what's going on with that. But when it comes to doing other people's music and singing covers, things like that, which I do often, very often, I just choose songs that I feel I can do justice and stay within my range without, you know, blowing myself out or sounding not very good, to be honest. But, you know, when it comes to the harmonizing stuff with Y&T and doing backup vocals, you know, yeah, I'm very confident in that. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, what note Dave Menichetti wants me to hit. I'll hit it.
Yeah, I got to say, like, on some of your solo acoustic work, I mean, I love the fact that you played Ice Cream Man. It's one of my favorites. But Summer Breeze, that's awesome.
Yeah, man. Yeah. You know, I a buddy of mine, Mickey Garrett, we got together and we just cut some covers and just for fun, you know, a long time ago we did that. So you must have heard that on SoundCloud or something, that Summer Breeze or.
Well, you did it actually. It was, I saw it on YouTube. It was one, it was just you solo with the 12 string guitar and just doing the whole acoustic set, what looked like in your living room or something like that practically. But,
oh yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. So it was one of the live streams I was doing.
Yes,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I love the song, man. I mean, you know, Summer Breeze, man. That's classic. Classic stuff. That's, you know, that's what I really enjoy taking classic songs that I grew up on and that I have, you know, had in my life that I love so much and just turning them acoustic if that's possible. Because some songs don't lend very well to an acoustic platform. But a lot of times they do. And, you know, when you can get it stripped down like that and still have it the song, even just one guy and a guitar, man, is, to me, that is like the ultimate, you know, if you can translate that, that is really the ultimate right there. You know, it's not always easy, you know, as they say, three chords and the truth, you know, you gotta pull it apart, figure it out.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I mean, and I know you're doing and are doing some shows, you know, just the solo shows with the acoustic. Do you throw in your own music in there too?
Well, I haven't had a chance yet. I'm actually doing a gig here in town where I live, in Rockland, California, at Quarry Park Amphitheater. Warrant is playing on, July 17th, and I'm opening for Warrant, doing a solo acoustic thing. And I'm contemplating on stripping down my first single, Insanity, and doing that acoustic. I mean, I wrote it on an acoustic, but, you know, I've heard the song. It's got some production to it, and it does require a full band to, you know, point across. So I'm going to try to see what I can do with that and possibly do a live acoustic solo. Let's see.
Now, I mean, yeah, it must be, of course, super cool to open for Warrant. I mean, How many offers do you get to open for people in that case? Do you think that, and of course, I know we've talked about Y&T and their touring schedule, but do you think that it's the kind of thing that will start to happen more for you?
Yeah, I think if I want it to happen, if I really want to, you know, take this solo thing and put a band together and you know, do that whole bit, I'm pretty sure I can, you know, find some doors to walk through to get the music out there and get in front of some people and, you know, get on something decent with another band or something, you know. But that's all, you know, still so for right now, so far in the future, I you know, it's definitely an idea. But, you know, like I said, with Y&T, I'm hoping that things really start to pick up for Y&T so we can get back out there, and I'll just kind of, you know, navigate from there, see how it goes.
So then, what's the best thing about playing for with Y&T?
What's the best thing?
Yeah.
Steady patient.
steady patient. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a lot of best things, I guess, that go with this gig. You know, first and foremost is that I was a fan when I was a kid, so I got to be in one of my favorite bands, and to me, that's bragging rights right there. You know, you know, when I was first starting to learn how to play bass was listening to Y&T records when I was 14, 15 years old, and you know, learning those songs, you know. And what's crazy is when I do play this material, it takes me right back to that time period, you know, and remembering that this is why I'm doing this right now is because I loved this band so much and their music. And I was so influenced to want to play music by that. But yet, full circle, here I am on stage and I can look over and there's Dave Menichetti ripping a solo. You know, it's like total dream come true. It's crazy. But, you know, another great thing is, the fans, you know, they're some of the most loyal, most energetic people, you know, that come to these shows, and they're just so, you know, in it, man. They're really in it, and you can tell that these are diehard, long-lived fans of that music, you know. And it's just a real bonus to be part of a legacy that is Y&T, and to be able to carry on, you know, help to carry on, carry the torch to keep this music alive and keep it being played live, you know. It's crazy because we see, you know, the older fans will bring their kids, and I'm talking like little kids, like 10 years old, you know. And it reminds me of being that age and you know, to see myself in the crowd like that, and they're, you know, tripping on Y&T, and they're watching Dave Menichetti and what he's doing, and, you know, I'm just wondering what's going through their heads. You know, it's a trip.
Yeah, I mean, that's a hell of a legacy. I mean, you know, starting in 1974 and still going today, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to playing bass, like, was bass the instrument that you kind of wanted to start with, or did you want to be a guitarist originally, or, like, how did you kind of, I know you play all the instruments, but how did you kind of, like, settle in as a bass player?
Well, I started on drums when I was 5. I moved to guitar when I was around 10. And in my neighborhood at the time, everyone played guitar when we were kids. It seemed like, you know, every neighbor kid that I knew had a guitar and wanted to be in a band. And then I ran into a couple drummers that, you know, in my neighborhood that were better than me on drums. So I was like, well, I'll play bass then, because we wanted to make a band when we were kids. So that's kind of what pushed me in playing bass. But then when I, like I said, when I discovered Y&T and Iron Maiden and Rush and, you know, even like Paul McCartney, you know, that's when I really looked at bass as my main instrument. That's what sort of like, okay, this is going to be the main thing for me. And really learn it and be a part of it, you know. But, I mean, I never stopped playing other instruments. It's just that when it came to a band situation, you know, bass was my main gig. But that's what really drove me towards, you know, taking the bass as the main vehicle for me was, you know, after seeing Steve Harris and Geddy Lee and, you know, even Chris Squire from Yes, you know, stuff like that. Tony Franklin, I mean, Rudy Sarzo. I mean, I can go down a major list of bass players, man, that just, you know, Billy Sheehan. It's like crazy how many great players, man. And being a young, influential kid like that, you know, where it's like back then they were just always such great players. You don't see too much of that anymore, you know, of just natural born players. I mean, I know they're out there. I mean, and there is a small group that I see floating around here and there. But, you know, like I said before, man, it's just so easy for people to make music on their computers. You don't even know how to learn how to play an instrument. You know, you can just pull up a pad or some kind of a loop or whatever and start creating. I mean, I'm sure there's 5-year-olds out there making music that's on Spotify now. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes we see how many songs are released on Spotify every single day, and it is truly insane. And how do you, cut through all that noise? Because it's as many amateurs as it is professionals, definitely.
Yeah, a lot of truth to that. And that's what was so great about record labels and the beginning of the industry, even though it's always been sort of a corrupt industry, but just the fact that there were some gatekeepers. You know, if you go back and you look at the like early 70s, mid 70s, down the line like that, and you look at the charts, and it's a trip. It's like looking back in history, and you see all these records that were released at the same time, same year, that are now classic records today, mm-hmm. like the most biggest records of all time. And that was just, a small batch of bands and artists, because there were gatekeepers saying, you're not good enough, your music isn't good enough, you can't come in. So they would let in the best of the best, and that's why it's classic today,
Now, I have to say my favorite Y&T song is, without any question, Winds of Change. I'm kind of curious, what is your favorite to play?
I always say Hang 'Em High. It's just, playing that live and the reaction that the crowd gives, especially the diehards, because it's sort of a deeper cut track, but it's just driving. I mean, the song, it's just, the ripping guitar lead, the breakdowns, there's everything in that song that lends to the live vibe. And that's what I love about Hang 'Em High. But, hey, Forever, I mean, Mean Streak, Black Tiger, Open Fire. I mean, again, the catalog is just so extensive. There isn't a bad Y&T song. And I can say that with a straight face. And, what's that?
And don't forget Winds of Change. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I thought
we
all agreed it was the best song. Wasn't that what happened?
What's that?
I said, I thought we all agreed it was their best song. Isn't that what happened? Or was it just me?
Oh, no, that was just you. No. So, hey, Winds of Change, man, playing that one live too, it gives me an opportunity to step back and, because I don't play for the whole first half of the song, but just to admire and sit there and take it in and watch Dave and watch the reaction from the crowd looking at him, it's pretty incredible, man. And that is definitely a favorite part of the night when we have that in the set, is to step back and just take in everything that's going down, and then looking around going, wow, I'm here. I'm up here too. <It's> crazy.
Yeah, that's super cool. Extremely cool. Is there somebody else I mean, we saw some of the list of some of the people like Mike Tramp that you jammed with and who were big fans of, Janie Lane, one of my all time favorites. Is there anybody else that you are looking to, you'd love to jam with, that you haven't gotten an opportunity to?
Yeah, I'd like to jam with Lenny Kravitz.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be cool.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that'll probably never happen. But then again, I never thought I'd be in Y&T either. So.
yeah, he can't say.
Crazy things happen. No, that's a good question, to think about, like, who you might want to collaborate with. I mean, most of the guys that I would want to collaborate with or play with are gone already, Prince and Bowie and, people like that, of course. But, the ones that are left, Lenny, definitely. I take that back. You know what? Maybe someday soon I will play with that guy. You got to manifest, right? You got to say things to make
absolutely.
It happen.
Throw it out to the universe. He needs a bassist too, right?
What's that?
Yeah, absolutely. I said he needs a bassist too. So what? Could happen.
Yeah. Well, there was a time in the '90s that he was looking for a bass player, early '90s, and it was right around the "Are You Gonna Go My Way" album, and I heard about it, and I did. I called his management, and I tried to hunt down a way to try to get an audition, and that didn't work. I couldn't get an in on that, but. And that's the thing, that comes back to, when I met Frank Hannon, that a lot of doors opened for me because just the association with him. And I know that played a big role in me getting the gig with Y&T, so Being in the right circle of people at the right time definitely helps the situation. You know, if you're a musician, it's kind of get your career rolling, you know. It is definitely a timing thing, but it's who you know. They always say it's who you know.
Well, and it's almost 5 years to the day, isn't it, that you joined YNT now?
Wow. Yeah, you're right, actually. Wait, yeah. Let me think about that. I think I joined in March, late March, and my first March, gig was in April at the Agora Hills Canyon Club. Yeah, that's right.
Just over 5 years now.
Well, 5 years, 5 years minus one because of being off for this long of a period.
Yeah, absolutely. Creatively, what else have you been doing? Is there anything else you've been doing besides writing songs creatively to express yourself during this COVID?
Besides writing music and recording?
Yeah. Is there anything else you do? Any other hobbies that you do to express your creativity?
Well, as I speak to you, I just took a break from hanging a bunch of shiplap on my bedroom wall. So, yeah, I've been doing some house projects and building a backyard and doing lots of stuff. You know. But, no, you know, honestly, man, I'm a musician. I've been a musician a long time. And that's – it's like I've said that before. I need to find a hobby because at one point music was my hobby, and it then became a career. And now it's like, you know, it's all I do for the most part. But I don't look at it as, you know, a job or anything. It's just what you do. I always use this term. It's kind of like diarrhea. It's going to come out, you know. But I don't think I've ever said that in public. But,
well, certainly crazy.
But it's true, you know. I mean, you could try to hold it in as much as you can, and it's going to come out because, you know, if you got, let's say, a song in your head, you know, you got to get it out. That's what a creative musician would do. But so, you know, with other hobbies and stuff, I just find that I just do music, you know. I don't even really think about other things, you know, other than out of necessity if I got to do something else. But I think you guys are onto something. I think I should probably find a hobby.
Well, don't stop making the great music while you're at it. How old were you when you kind of realized that you wanted to make a career of this?
How old was I? God, mm-hmm. You know, like a lot of up-and-coming musicians, especially back in the 80s and stuff, you know, I was a teenager, man. And I mean, honestly, if I even go back before that, the first time I laid eyes on the gatefold of Kiss Alive 2, I said, that's what I want to do. That's exactly what I want to do. I want to be Gene Simmons. That's what I said when I was, you know, like 10 years old or something, you know. So I knew early on that I wanted to make music my life and a career. It was just a matter of time of when I would be able to do it, you know. When I guess, you know, the universe would allow me to do it, because I truly believe, again, man, coming back to it's timing. You know, sometimes the time isn't right for you to do things in life, you know, and it's not up to you. It's basically some other force's call to let you know, okay, now is the time, and the time is right. Do it now, you know. I think if you're in tune with that and God tells you, you know, then you roll with it.
I still want to be Gene right? Simmons, but...
Yeah, we all want to be Gene Simmons, but that's just for the tongue.
Well, yeah, and the flying and the blowing fire and all that, you know. No, man, I mean, I was such a huge, huge Kiss fan, like millions of other kids, you know, at that time in the late 70s, you know. It's just, it was everything Kiss, you know. I used to get in an argument with my stepdad. He'd be like, "Ah, man, listen to Santana, listen to Journey, you know, listen to Tower of Power." And he was right, you know. I mean, those are amazing bands. But I was a kid, and I was like, "No, Kiss, man, Love Gun, you know, like Destroyer." He hated Kiss and I hated Santana.
Listening to some Kiss 2 days ago, and it was one of the live albums, and it was, you know, Paul giving the one of his speeches before Love Gun that went on about 7 minutes, twice as long as the song. I'm just laughing so hard. I just love those guys. It's just so great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was the master of the live rap. I mean, if you were gonna be a front man back then, man, that's what you were contending with, and you better have your rap down, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I was just gonna say, like, there's so much to making music, you know, in the art form, but because it's not only being able to play, but you know, it's being able to play properly within a song, it's being able to sing that song, it's being able to, you know, kind of give that song to the fans and perform it in such a way that everybody wants to see it.
Yeah. There's a lot that definitely is connected to it. You know, there's all the above. I mean, just what you were just describing, you know. There was a question in that.
At what point did you feel like you were good enough on stage to really sell the song?
That's interesting. When did I think I was good enough? Well, I guess there was a sign early on that when other bands are coming to you after your gig and you've opened it for them or whatever, and they're saying, hey, come join my band, or, you know, we'll kick our bass player out and come join us. Or, you know, that's, I think, when you start to realize, oh, well, I must be good enough, you know. But that's kind of a tough question, man, because that's a real self-analyzing, I guess, you know, to try to break that down. But, you know, it could just come from just your heart and your gut feeling, you know, that, you know, you look at it like this, like, there's so many people that are out there playing music and making a living doing it now and touring and in a band. It seems like everyone's in a band, you know. Everyone plays an instrument, it seems like, these days. I'm not going back of what I was saying, that there's not enough of it, but even hobbyists or you know, the guy, you know, the old dude down the road that you know, works at the depot and he plays his guitar when he gets home and off work, you know, and doing that kind of thing. But, you know, I don't know, man. Being good enough, I don't know, you know.
To promote your album. You come to promote your album and you get some free therapy. That's how we roll.
Yeah, you really pull it out, don't you?
Yeah, we're trying to dig in, yes. No,
but it's kind of like, it's hard to, anyone you would ask anything, like if they were, like, let's say, a plumber, you know, like, well, when did you know that you were good enough, like, doing plumbing? Well, when it paid my bills.
Yeah.
I guess that's what it comes down to, man.
Yeah, fake it till you make it, right?
Yeah, I guess to a point, you know. I mean, you got to have substance. Otherwise, you know, you can fake it all day long, but when that time comes, you know, and you really get that shot, you better have the ammo to back it up, you know. So it's just a lot of perseverance and hard work, learning your craft, you know, and having confidence in that to, you know, walk into a room and play with other people, you know, your peers and hold your own, you know. Yeah, that takes a certain level of confidence. But who's to judge or say when that person is ready or not? You know, that's up to that individual, you know, to feel that out. But I know some people, you know, it's hard for them to play in front of people or get on stage, you know, to get scared or something. But yeah, I've never felt that way, you know. Stage is where I belong. I definitely feel that.
So, with 5 songs released so far in 2021, what do you see for the future? Is there any more songs that you're releasing this year? Is there a full length LP coming up, do you think, sometime down the road? Or what's your kind of short and learned long term plans here as far as your solo career?
Well, I'll definitely continue to put out music, whether it's singles or EPs. A full-length record, I don't know about that because of just the way that people consume music now. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, much time is really spent, you know, with people that would, you know, in one sitting, listen to a whole album. I mean, unless you're a real diehard of that person or that artist or band, that's a time investment. I mean, you know, remember back in the 90s when people were putting out 16-track CDs.
Oh, boy.
That's
double
an investment
CDs
of
became
your time.
A big thing.
Yeah. So, you know, and then now it's the total polar opposite is, you know, singles are the way to go because, you know, it can capture someone's attention long enough for 3.5 minutes. And they, if they like that, and if you do have a little more to offer, they can go there. And that's what I believe that the EP is really kind of where it's at right now. You know, nothing wrong with putting out full length records if you've got the material to do it. But, you know, why not hold back just a little bit and give the good stuff instead of a, you know, a couple good songs and the rest is kind of, you know, filler, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, kinda I always,
like what I, that,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, that's what I love, you know, about records is that, you know, it was like 35 minutes and you usually had all the killer stuff in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when you're talking about records from like the 70s and the 80s, you know, when there was 8 tracks on there, because that's all they could fit on vinyl really without it sounding terrible. You know, that's why they did that is, you know, if you look back, you know, a lot of those classic records are like 8 to 10 songs tops. And it was because that's all they could fit on one side at a time. And then, you know, cassettes of course come out and then they can stack, you know, a couple more songs on there. But then when the CD came out, it was like, all right, we could put everything we've ever done on one disc. You know,
yeah.
So like, yeah, it just gets too much, I think, you know. I remember, what was it, Korn or something? They had like a 19-track CD, 20 tracks. It was just, and half of it was crap to me. I mean, to me, but, you know. So, yeah, I think nowadays, you know, with singles, it gives the artist an opportunity to cherry-pick the best and put that in front of people. And if they want to come for more, have a little more to give them, you know.
Excellent. Well, then hopefully too, it can provide them a reason to come and see you live, and hopefully you're able to kind of play live and take advantage of those kind of things for sure.
Yeah. Well, like I said, man, you know, when it comes to the YNT schedule, I'll navigate around that and make my next move, you know, but I will definitely continue to put out, you know, recorded music regardless. You know, that's definitely a future plan. I do have another song actually that, you know, right after Live For Today is out for a little bit. I'm going to throw another one out there, you know, that'll be a little different taste of what I do and a little different than everything else that I've put out too. And that's another thing, you know, when it comes to, you know, releasing full records too, I almost feel like if you get too hodgepodge, let's say if your style's kind of drift around, you know, it can confuse people a little bit of, well, who is this person or what is this band? The music, every song sounds different. Or I've always been a fan of that. I like diversity in an artist with different styles and stuff, but I can see how the average casual listener can get confused, you know. So by doing singles like this, you're just kind of introducing a little flavor of who you are, you know, a little taste. Okay.
Will you be releasing that first on your website again, as you did with this one?
Say again, that was really muffled. I couldn't hear you.
Sorry, will you be releasing that again on your website first, like you did with this latest track?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the trend that I'm going to follow. Is just basically working from the website like that, you know, making it available. You know, the streaming platforms are regardless, really, you know, if you're going to put out recorded music, it'll end up on there regardless, you know. So I think just by offering for people that are interested to go to aaronlee.com, you know, they can stream music right there and they can purchase it if they'd like to, and still, you know, hit the streaming platforms, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Pandora, whatever it is.
aaronlee.com, and that's a L-E-I-G-H, just so people know.
Yes, sir.
The proper spelling, they can also keep up with you, I'm guessing, all the social media and that type of thing?
Yeah, you can hit all my links on aaronlee.com, everything's on there, Facebook, Instagram, you know, all the likes, all that stuff.
Awesome.
All right, anything else you want to promote, anything else you want to tell the listening audience before we wrap this?
I think that's about it, man. I think it's a wrap.
Okay, well, what you need to do, though, in my opinion, is you need to talk to Dave, and you just say, Dave, let's throw one of my songs into the Y&T set and see how that goes.
Yeah, and you know what he'd do? He'd be like, oh, you know what? I just saw this bass player in this other band, man.
And then no, you'll end up with Kravitz. It'll all work out.
Well, look, you know what? Maybe this might fuel for, you know, add some gas to the fire to get Y&T to record some stuff. You know, I can see that happening in the future. I truly do. So,
I hope so.
Yeah, let's just all hope for that.
Yeah, for sure.
I did enjoy the acoustic EP they did. That, you know, that's
yeah,
that was great stuff. I like that. I love to hear the classics redone in an acoustic fashion, so it's always works for me.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun to make, and a lot of the Y&T catalog, you know, obviously wouldn't lend itself to acoustic treatments, but there are some serious gems in that catalog that would just work great with the acoustic thing. And you know, it is called Acoustic Classics Volume 1 for a reason. There will be a Volume 2, and it's just a matter of, you know, working up the next batch of songs there. And I actually got to mix that album as well, so I'm proud of that.
Very cool.
Yeah,
very
absolutely.
Cool. Well, we've taken a bunch of your time here, so we'll let you go. And again, we really appreciate your talking to us. We really enjoyed the conversation.
Well, I really enjoyed it too. You guys got pretty deep on me there. I had to really think.
That's our goal. That's our goal.
All of the same questions. We'll just give you a few of the same questions as everybody else, but we don't want to give you all the same.
Yeah, no. You guys are great. Thank you, Brett and Mo. Really appreciate being on your show.
Well, thanks, Aaron, and all the best in the future, and we'll talk to you again.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Bye now.
Bye.